Hello and welcome to this week's Shoot the Moon podcast, broadcasting live and direct from Revenue Rocket World headquarters here in Bloomington, Minnesota. As you guys know, or maybe you don't, but if you tune in regularly, Revenue Rocket is the world's premier growth strategy and M&A advisor to tech-enabled services companies. With me today and talking about M&A deal structures are my partners, Ryan Barnett and Matt Lockhart. Welcome, guys.
Great topic again. Look forward to jumping in. Ryan, what's going on?
Yeah, hey guys, and thanks to everyone for listening here. The topic here today is really considering and evaluating some kind of structure as part of an M&A deal. When we look at structure, oftentimes when you consider a deal, it's going to have some kind of enterprise value. And that enterprise value may be broken up into certain areas, something like, let's say, a cash, an earnout, or a seller note. So today we're going to really kind of dig in into why firms should really consider the pros and cons to considering structure as part of an M&A deal. So, Mike, why don't you kick us off and further define structure a little bit? I gave a little preview there, but help us understand what when we say alternative deal terms or structure may be considered. Help a buyer or seller understand some of those terms.
Yeah, so I think we should, you know, certainly define all of the areas of currency in a transaction, because there's price or enterprise value, which is one number, and then there's terms, right? And terms come to how are you going to pay for that deal, right? Of course, there's cash. Cash is king. And we'll talk about the merits of cash in a transaction here in a little bit. Earnouts or gain share. And that's typically when a seller will take some risk, continue to have some risk. I think you have to remember as a seller in particular, you have all the risk in running your business today. And so when you sell your business and it includes some structure, you're certainly de-risking. But it also gives you some upside potential if you're the seller to participate in, you know, future growth and earnings in the business, depending on, you know, how you put that earnout or gain share arrangement together. There's oftentimes seller financing. Seller financing consists of, you know, a seller giving a note and becoming a secured creditor, if you will, to a buyer. And, you know, that's very similar to bank financing, but it usually comes at a premium interest rate because the risk associated with the seller offering that loan to the buyer versus not. And there's equity, right? Oftentimes buyers may use equity as a consideration. And as a seller, you can, you know, do what's called an equity roll or equity rollover. To participate in the upside of the combined entities in the future. And oftentimes private equity firms use that as part of their sort of consideration. There's various ways to get to sort of funding a transaction. That's sort of a whole separate podcast in its own right. And I know we've talked about some of that in the past, but in general, those are the main areas of, what we'll call consideration that would make up price. Did I miss anything there, Matt?
You know, it's the, you know, as you've often conveyed, Mike, creativity wins. And I think that as we talk about structure, it really, you know, comes down to creativity and the art of playing with the different levers that can create that win-win situation for both the buyer and the seller.
Yeah, there is one more comment on currency that some people consider to be currency in a transaction or terms, and that has to do with the compensation plan associated with a post-acquisition or merger deal for the seller. If you're selling in and going to be around for a while, you know, that employment agreement does have material value. And it should in many ways be thought about as consideration. And, you know, and outside of of the value consideration associated with that employment contract. This isn't really paid by the buyer, but any working capital harvest should be taken into consideration if you're a seller as well, because, you know, it is your money after all if you're a seller, and the only time you can actually harvest excess working capital, provided you have that, is during a sell side transaction. So, you know, that can be a material number, depending on your coverage ratio, sort of on your balance sheet. But, you know, most people think about that, as a bit of a sweetener in a deal term, but it should be mentioned here.
And I think just as a note on that, I think when you consider structure here, those are definitely components of that. It is when you talk about enterprise value, let's say the enterprise value for this conversation may be $40 million. And would you consider harvesting that working capital and the compensation plans? Would you consider that part of the enterprise value?
It's really not technically calculated in enterprise value, because they're outside of EV. Sometimes buyers will want to include that, but I would say for sure the working capital harvest is excluded from that, because in many ways it is the seller's money already. They could have harvested it if there's excess working capital if they chose to without a transaction. So that's for sure exempted. And the employment contract generally is also exempted, although there are very specific situations where a buyer may choose to load up an employment contract to be above market sort of compensation for the role of a seller. And then it can be considered as part of value, if you will, in the transaction. And I don't want to get into too much of the weeds on that, but there are some very narrow and specific situations where that would make sense. And we've seen that used as a tool to, you know, be creative and ultimately getting to a number that is important to the seller.
Yeah, that helps. Relatively technical, but it certainly helps to understand that. Matt, I liked really what you had mentioned earlier, that if you think about enterprise value and you're going to meet a certain number, again, I think we threw out $40 million out there, it's interesting to see those levers that someone may pull. Help me understand a little bit about those levers and see if you adjust one, what happens to some of the others.
Yeah, and maybe we sort of bring it back to, you know, that consistent topic that we try to encourage people to think about along the lines of selling in or selling out, right? And, you know, in the context of, say, if there's a baseline, you know, the number that you're using, $40 million, yet the seller is really, really focused on selling out and transitioning as quickly as possible, right? Well, you know, in that scenario, then they're very likely not going to, you know, want to utilize an earnout as part of that term structure, because, you know, naturally so, when there's an earnout in place, they want to feel in control of the ability to, you know, really attain and maximize that earnout. And that doesn't go along with the idea of transitioning out quickly. Likewise, you know, may not be thinking about equity participation moving forward. And so they're really going to want to maximize that cash at close, if not 100%, you know, something in certainly the 90s and percentile. And, you know, as such, they may be foregoing some opportunity to increase that enterprise value. On the flip side of the coin, when looking for an opportunity to sell in and grow with a new partner, then, you know, there's an opportunity to really increase enterprise value by utilizing an earnout as a means for additional value, by utilizing the opportunity for an equity role to get that quote-unquote second bite at the apple. And quite honestly, both of those in our experience and when we're involved, it really does have an opportunity to increase enterprise value by, in some cases, as much as 20%, 25%, if there's a real gain in that equity opportunity. Another means of increasing value is by committing to a seller note, you know, because, you know, the buyers are looking for as much are looking for cash flows to pay for some of that, you know, that value in a seller note, and naturally so the seller can gain further. You know, I think it at sort of a baseline level, it's a bit of that risk reward consideration. You know, when the seller is risking more by accepting, you know, more of that structure, well, if they feel good about the progress of their business, and, you know, most all of our clients do, they really do have an opportunity to increase that overall value attained in the long run through a transaction.
Right. Great summary, Matt. I think very, very well, very well done. I'd love to, Mike, I'm going to turn this over to you here, and let's start to dig into the type. So we mentioned cash, kind of earn out or gain share, seller financing, and equity. Those are four common structures that we see in deals. Mike, can you walk us through an earnout and why someone would use an earnout and let's start there and we can dig into more on the risks and benefits of an earnout.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I'll start with, you know, answering the question a little bit in a roundabout way. You know, the least expensive way to buy a firm is for all cash, right? So if you really believe in the deal and you're looking for synergies and 1 + 1 = 3, 4, or 5, and I would add the caveat, you have access to cash, either based on having some on your balance sheet, or through some sort of debt vehicle that can have an appropriate amortization, that would pay that seller all cash. You're certainly going to get the most leverage to price point. Now, with that said, there are very specific reasons to use an earnout. And some of those include, not only, to get aligned interest, which is the primary reason, to have someone pay attention, especially if the seller is selling in, and they want to get a more optimized value. So typically when you use an earnout, there's a higher enterprise value that gets paid if that earnout is achieved, because there's more risk being taken by the seller. And the only reason they would do that, of course, is for the promise of the additional upside in purchase price or higher purchase price. And, you know, the devil's in the details and how those are structured. I think, you know, it's my opinion that earnouts really need to be structured as win-win, not win-lose. Some buyers think about structuring earnouts as win-lose. They want to set up their seller to not make it, so they can save that money. You know, we think that's a big ethics problem. And you should really, as a seller, evaluate, you know, if that type of deal even makes sense. Or that buyer makes sense, because it may be an indication that that buyer isn't terribly ethical. At the same time, it may not be on purpose. And the reason I say that is there takes some specific skill to structure an earnout that achieves both sides, the buyer and seller's objectives, and becomes one that will likely get paid out. Now, Interestingly enough, you know, broad statistics in the M&A world say that earnouts get paid out at or above their index value about 86% of the time. Most sellers think earnouts will not get paid out. I've all heard stories about how certain sellers have not made their earnout. The primary reason that happens is because they weren't structured properly, and they were not aligned with aligned interest. They were done in a way that either was able to be manipulated after the fact or by a buyer, or they were just had poor structure. So if an earnout or what I call sort of a aligned interest gain share type program is structured properly, then there's a very high likelihood that if you work well with your buyer and everything's good post-transaction, that you will achieve that earnout. And it does ultimately achieve the goal of aligned interest. So, you know, we think earnouts, I mean, earnouts are often part of a transaction, I'd say more often than not. And you shouldn't, as a seller, be afraid of them. And at the same time, as a buyer, you want to be working with an advisor who can help you make sure that you've thought through all the aspects of, you know, what is the proper structure so that ultimately everybody turns into a win-win versus a win-lose deal.
Matt, would you like to dig in anything more on earnouts? We've heard a little bit on the structure there. Mike had mentioned kind of a non-fungible number or things that can't be manipulated. What have you seen in some deal terms that can help further define that?
And sort of building upon Mike's point that, you know, a seller will want the opportunity, or excuse me, a buyer will want the opportunity to make the appropriate changes within the organization, be it in integration, you know, be it to, you know, speed up growth through some additional spend and et cetera, et cetera. So especially within an IT services organization that is dynamic, you know, really pegging that earnout towards a level of growth, top line growth, right? So, you know, top line revenue attainment, we think is a really a good target. And because, you know, in IT services, and you know, that could also include you know, product plus services, being able to obtain that top line revenue means that you are also being consistent, you know, with your rate structure. You're not really decreasing rates as just a means of obtaining new business. So you're able to, you know, maintain your gross margin, which is, you know, obviously critical in services. It also means that as you are growing, you are increasing your capacity. You're increasing your delivery team appropriately. So I think that is really top line revenue. Now, you know, sellers, or excuse me, buyers may want to make it more complicated, you know, X percentage of client retention, X percentage of employee retention, you know, and, you know, again, going back to, you know, try to sort of keep it simple, stupid. Well, in order to maintain that, you know, top line revenue and grow it, well, naturally, you're going to have to keep those clients. You're going to have to keep those people. And so it's really just the easiest means for all parties to get around and really celebrate together, because, you know, everybody wants to see that that continued, you know, growing business.
Great points, Matt. I think oftentimes we've seen some enterprise deals out there, enterprise valuations that are maybe they might be twice as much as another offer. but the structure is so heavily based on an earnout, and that earnout is so aggressive that if they're not met, there's such a discount to the actual thing. So I think there you do have to be careful when you're as a seller to consider, are the goals attainable? Can we be there successfully? Do I have an opportunity to upsell and cross sell? Do I have the ability to keep my team to go after that? From a buyer's perspective, this is a good risk mitigation on if you're not hitting certain goals, you're protecting some of the cash that goes into that. So, Mike, maybe you could help us understand callers or some kind of risk mitigation a buyer may use with an earnout that helps the deal.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think sometimes there's ways to structure, well, not sometimes, there's ways to structure earnouts with these sort of collars or ditches aligned. Like, you know, you can cut it in at 80% of the target and cap it at 120% of the target. That gives, you know, both buyers and sellers some comfort that they're going to make some earnout, because it's very hard to predict an earnout target exactly to the number, right? And, you know, sometimes earnouts get a bad rap because there's a cliff that says, hey, you don't get to a certain number, you get zero. And if you get past that number, you get no more and all that. You know, I think a better way to do it is to sort of create a broader target that allows there to be less precision in hitting the number in an earnout. And as long as you're kind of broadly within this, you know, 40% range, you know, up or down of the target by 20, you're going to get an earnout. And that's a much more fair way to come to a conclusion. And certainly there's lots of ways to structure that. You know, you can add incentives for overperformance and some discounts for underperformance. And, you know, there's a bunch of different levers to pull there. But it does help you sort of, you know, get to a place where you can have a much higher level of confidence that you're going to make your earnout or get to a very close number, pursuant to your forecast, because those are integrally linked and you have to know there's certain things that you're just not going to know. I mean, economic conditions could change. You could have a much more positive environment. You could get a lot of synergies with your buyer. If you're a seller, that could mean you could blow the number out, right? Likewise, you could run into some economic headwinds or whatever. So I think being more thoughtful and mindful of walking a mile in the other person's shoes on these deals and structuring of earnouts certainly will help you strike a balance that is more fair and one that ensures that everyone's, you know, does have aligned interests and is focused on, you know, achieving the numbers moving forward, which in the end is really a main reason for having an earnout. You know, I'd be remiss in not mentioning that, you know, another reason to have an earnout is that you're certainly punting a little bit of when the timing of when a particular payment of that enterprise value will be made. So there is a bit of a financing component that's associated with that that is important in calculating your internal rate of return if you're a buyer. And knowing that, just like a seller note, you know, these are also financing vehicles. They're not just simply about aligned interest. And that, if you think about cash flow and supported cash flow from an acquisition as a buyer, you know, some of these things that, do delay those payments a little bit, pursuant to offering a seller some upside. There's some win-win there that, you know, should certainly be taken into consideration as well.
Great. That helps. Transitioning a little bit, because we've got a couple topics here, but if we look at seller financing, what are some benefits and drawbacks to seller financing and seller notes and such? Matt, I can turn it over to you, or Mike, either way.
Yeah, I'll jump in, Mike. You can kind of round it out. Well, so, you know, what is the basic of seller financing, right? So the seller is giving the note, right, to the buyer. to extend, a loan, right? As part of the overall consideration. Oftentimes, that financing could be from a time frame in line with the earnout period, could extend even longer. What is the benefit to the buyer? Well, they need to put less cash up front. They can use the cash flows of the business as a means to pay off the overall consideration. That can be of real benefit to a buyer, so that they don't need to, come up with as much cash. For the seller, it's a means of increasing overall value. In all cases, a seller note should come with interest. And so you're earning interest. You're becoming a bank, if you will. Banks usually do pretty good. When they're healthy with deposits, and the longer that financing period is in place, the more interest gained, and again, just a real opportunity to again increase overall value. Now, obviously, a seller is going to want to be comfortable with the health of the buyer's, business and the health of their own business, so that the cash flows can continue to pay down that seller note. We've never seen, correct me if I'm wrong, but we've never, at least in my experience, seen a situation where a seller note is defaulted upon. And, that's part of our job, obviously, as an advisor, to ensure that is going to be a good investment, if you will. Mike, what did I miss?
Yeah, I don't think anything. I think, seller notes, I think there's only one, caveat for sellers and seller notes is that depending on how the buyer may be structuring financing with their bank in addition to a seller note, you need to understand whether your note would be put on full standby for repayment pursuant to a relationship with the bank. So sometimes this is a requirement, and I add a caveat that it's only sometimes. When a buyer uses SBA financing, it's sometimes a requirement that the SBA, actually not the bank, puts on a deal for a repayment of a seller note to be on what's called full standby until the SBA note is either paid down or is paid off. And it means you won't be getting payments until that occurs. And so, as a seller, you want to confirm what your, the frequency and the timing and sort of the interest accrual will be on that seller note, as you would in, any prudent business decision. Understanding, though, that you want to understand the perspective of the rest of the financing package that a buyer may be needing to get or will be getting in support of your transaction, so that you're not at the mercy to be on quote unquote full standby for repayment if that's not what you've agreed to. Now, maybe that is what you've agreed to and it won't be an issue because you'll be accruing interest over a period of maybe months or years. And those payments will start a year from now or 2 years from now. And you're good with that because you're accruing interest. You just need to go kind of in eyes wide open on that to understand the full nature of the buyer's financing package and how you are in that. You should also know that from a recovery perspective, even if you're not on standby from a note repayment, it is very unlikely that in the hierarchy of debtors in a deal that you will be ahead of the bank. If a bank is involved, they'll be first in line to get repaid. Generally, they'll have the biggest loan in a transaction on a buyout. And you're just going to have to accept that if you're going to offer a seller note. Matt, to your point, we can't think of a situation where one hasn't been paid back. Usually, these buyers are very, reputable business people, and if they're going to make a commitment to you pursuant to a seller note, they're going to honor it. And I think as a seller, I was going to provide a seller note, you do want to make sure that you have an appropriate risk premium from an interest perspective on your note to be, you know, aligned with market. And today those risk premiums are probably in the, you know, 8, 6, 7, 8, 9% range in some cases, generally more than an interest payment to a bank by a couple percentage points. And it's just, you know, how it is. So, you don't want to leave money on the table there either. And you want to make sure that you're being paid accordingly for the risk you're taking associated with the note.
One quick question here. Are seller notes used as a earnout provision, or is there, can seller notes be tied to hitting certain thresholds?
Yeah, they certainly can, Ryan. There can be conditions to the note, that's what we call a condition of the note, that certain performance criteria have to be hit. In that case, they're kind of a hybrid, right, situation between an earnout and a note. And based again on, and not to keep coming back to SBA programs, but some SBA programs don't really allow an earnout. They require a note. And so those notes have to be structured in such a way that they do have some performance criteria in there to protect. The SBA sees it as a way to protect the buyer from, you know, making sure they have the cash flow associated with paying the note. So it's not a nefarious thing. It's just a additional risk mitigation play for both the bank that's writing the loan as well as the SBA in that situation.
Okay, sounds good. And then transitioning to equity here, this is a kind of an equity role. Let's start with just a quick definition and the pros and cons on that. Mike, I'll give you the start, and Matt, if you can round that out, that'd be great.
Yeah, and I'm sure Matt can add a lot of flavor here. He's been in the middle of negotiating one this week, as a matter of fact. So, you know, equity, first of all, you know, you should know that equity is a very expensive currency, and probably the most expensive terms, if you will, of any of the things we've talked about, loans or seller notes or earnouts, or even getting a loan for a cat that we'd use in a transaction, predominantly because it can, if things go well, it can appreciate very, very quickly. And so you think about as a buyer, if you're going to give up some equity in your business, it's a great way to align interests because you're going to now have a partner or an owner in that business. And you're doing it pursuant to what oftentimes a term in the industry is called a second bite of the apple, where someone, you know, you're going to sell in and you're going to be part of this thing for a while, whether that be as an investor or an operator or both. And you're going to expect that that broader entity is going to be sold or recapitalized at some point in the future. And usually that's within the next 5 years. It's typically how private equity firms operate. It's a swap of a portion of your equity for the equity in the new organization based on relative value units of the respective companies. And so there's acquisitions or mergers that often are cultivated through an equity swap where, you know, the larger firm in this case is valued and the smaller firm is valued, and then the relative value of that equity is swapped. It could be for part of the equity or all of the equity in a merger or an acquisition. And the seller becomes an equity holder or owner in the buyer's business. And so I think, you know, going into that, you need to understand as a seller that you're going to have a new partner. Likely it's going to be a situation where you're a minority partner because you've taken some money off the table in a transaction. And, you know, maybe you have some earnout or aligned interest still components that are in play, but you're now also a partner. You own equity in that new business. And as a buyer, you need to also, you know, understand that as well. You're managing a partnership. I would add that partnerships are hard. So you want to make sure it doesn't matter what partnership it is. You have to work at it. So it's important to make sure that you have again, I'm kind of using this term a lot, aligned interest in your partnership going into one, so that you can see the value of that equity over the short term and long term. And you will be an owner, so likely you'll get distributions of profit. You'll have responsibilities in the business at whatever level that equity is granted in the role. And you will also have, you know, if you're a seller, minority shareholder rights and things like that. So you want to make sure that you have good legal and M&A counsel when you're considering an equity role, so that you're in a good position to ultimately monetize that equity consistent with your long-term sort of exit strategy. Matt, did I miss anything or further thoughts on that?
No, not in terms of the technicalities. I just want to, you know, I think it's a real opportunity. And I think that sometimes, sellers don't recognize the opportunity that they have, with regards to the second bite at the apple. Now, clearly, to your point, Mike, they gotta feel really good about the partnership and they gotta invest in themselves in the partnership. And that can, sometimes that can be hard, for a seller because they've sort of been, sailing their own ship, if you will. Mike, you're a former sailor. You know what it's like to sail your own ship versus, you know, being on a bigger ship with, you know, a team of people and that's different, but there's a real upside opportunity and especially if it's a smaller, selling organization and they've got an opportunity to join a larger, more established organization and, work with that organization and really learn from that organization. So there can not just be a benefit financially, but there can be a benefit professionally and personally. You know, I often, you know, sort of talk to some of our clients and say, you know, it's oftentimes not a bad idea to align with really smart people and who've been very successful in growing businesses and creating value. So, just accentuating that as a real possibility.
Yeah. I would also add, you know, private equity, you know, also affords some very interesting options that, you know, you may not have as a entrepreneur, you know, or in a small partnership or a solopreneur in the sense that you're owning all of the business. And that's really capital, access to capital. So, you know, part of why private equity funded either platforms or add-ons are interesting is because, you know, there's some financial engineering that gets done by those private equity partners in partnership with a business that's operating in the, you know, IT services or tech-enabled services space that are afforded to you as an equity owner that you may not have otherwise. And the opportunity to really grow a material business and add and enhance the value of that equity and influence it without as many constraints to access to capital as you had before is certainly a material consideration and one that, you know, I would take seriously. There's just so many great private equity firms out there that are doing really interesting things that, you know, it's worth paying attention, I think, when, you know, someone calls and says, hey, we're, you know, representing a buyer and, you know, either they're a private equity firm or they're a firm that is sponsored, if you will, by private equity. If they have the right sponsor and the right strategy, boy, that can really be a great, great opportunity for you to roll in equity and get a material second bite at the apple.
And if I was to round this out, we started with it and I'll end with this is, just cash. You know, if it's an all cash transaction, we had mentioned earlier that it's likely the lowest price for, buying a business, but perhaps the least risk. Mike, just wanted to give us the 30 second rundown or kind of pros and cons there.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that it's as big a risk as people consider, right? Because you either, as a buyer, believe in the merits of the transaction, you've done your due diligence to determine that this business is a healthy going concern that is as represented. Maybe you've done a quality of earnings analysis to further vet and certify the cash flows. You believe in the strategic imperative and the combination with the business that you're acquiring, and that the 1+1 does really equal 3. And if that's really the case, then the risk mitigation of a gain share or a different structure for the trade-off of paying more for that business doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Now, I do get that, you know, you have to have the cash to be able to pay the cash, right? But if it's a buy low sort of sell high world, where you get the most leverage to by paying all cash, and you believe in the transaction, fully believe in the transaction and the merits of the deal, then it's somewhat of a no brainer to be a cash buyer, right? And you're going to be in a position to fully take advantage of the synergies as a buyer for your own benefit versus share in the synergies not, you know, be able to, you know, be able to fully take advantage of increasing your internal rate of return as a buyer. And so I would encourage buyers to think hard about how do you best afford a all cash deal, and think about doing deals that way versus where many people go into a deal thinking, well, you know, I kind of believe in the deal, or I really believe in the deal, but I want risk mitigation, further risk mitigation. I think oftentimes that's not the right thinking. You should look at how do we capture the full amount of synergies moving forward, because if they exist in the business case, you might as well, you know, take all those chips off the table and capture all the synergies. It's also in some ways better for a seller, right? Sellers like cash deals. They don't necessarily like the trade-offs for a lower enterprise value, but some of them, depending on their situation, may determine that's a reasonable and fair trade-off based on where they are in their life. You know, maybe they're selling out, maybe they're, you know, wanting to, you know, do an orderly transition and move on. And for sellers, I think you also have to think long and hard about that. Is it reasonable to trade off, overall enterprise value, where you're likely to get a higher number, if you took some sort of earnout or gain share or whatever, or even a seller note where you're going to get interest, versus taking all cash. And I think everyone's situation is different, both as buyers and sellers, and it's important to thoroughly think through that, and not make assumptions about how it should be done or could be done, but to, you know, really think about those risk reward trade-offs and the impact to enterprise value on both sides, whether you're a buyer or seller, as you, you know, contemplate whether a deal you should take or give an all cash deal, or whether there should be structure.
That's great. We've got a great podcast here going today. I'm going to give a quick summary of what I've heard, and then I'll turn it over to Matt for anything else you want to cover. But, you know, I heard there's a big correlation between higher enterprise value and the structures that you may have. So, the more structure you may accept in a deal, it's likely that structure may come with a higher enterprise value. On the earnout side, I heard that earnouts really need to be focused on meeting really both your company growth goals and built on a non-fungible and defined targets. So a revenue target that can be attainable but still profitable for the buyer. And understand that some kind of collar may be used. So if you don't hit certain thresholds, you may not earn that earnout. But in reality, most earnouts are met and paid out, and ultimately leading to higher enterprise values. buyers in that case should really think about the timing of those payments to make sure that they're aligned with the return on investment that they've got. We talked a little bit about seller notes, and they can be, in a way, considered guaranteed payments. And at the same time, realize that a buyer may have different funding sources that need to be paid off before that seller note. Those seller notes could be tied to performance criteria in a note to protect buyers, especially if it's an SBA-related deal, to avoid a more structured earnout. And then we talked a bit about equity, and equity is such a strong tool for everyone to gain share together, and ultimately perhaps the largest wealth creation tool within the other different structures. And as a seller, you're able to participate in the benefits of that combined company, and as a buyer, you're truly aligned interests into the success of the business. And lastly, we talked about cash. You know, as a buyer, it's a really great way to show that you believe in the business and that you're willing to stand behind your reason for acquiring it. For a seller, it may be a good time to understand that the cash in your pocket is that risk mitigation of future earnouts is worth a little less enterprise value. So that's what we covered today. Matt, any closing thoughts?
Well, first off, great summary, Ryan. I'll go back to sort of where I started, which is, you know, creativity wins. And you know, in order to be creative to the benefit of both the buyer and the seller, I think it's absolutely critical to work with an advisor who understands the business and understands the market and understands the services, so that that advisor can do a very good job of creating that structure, that it's not just about getting the deal done, but enables the path to future success for really both parties. And so it sort of harkens back to one of those key principles of work with an advisor that is rooted and has experienced and is focused on your particular industry. So that's all I got. Mike, how do we close this thing out?
Thanks, guys. With that, we'll tie a ribbon on it for this week's Shoot the Moon podcast. Thank you all for tuning in, and look forward to next week when we'll unpack more growth strategy and M&A topics for IT services firms worldwide. Thanks for tuning in, and look forward to having you listen next week. Take care and make it a great day and week. So long.